yeah.
but not pain on your knee at all.
Radio.
I mean, which is really nice, man. They've come a long way with that stuff, man. They really have.
Yeah, I'm hoping I can put it off for about 4 or 5 years, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah. All right, you ready to go?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Broadcasting from Cincinnati, you're listening to the Ringside Reporter Podcast. All the news in the world of boxing right here.
Well, I'm talking to you the way I want to talk to you.
Now, here's your host, Eric Lorda.
And we are live. Welcome to the Ringside Reporter Show, where we talk about the latest boxing news. If it's related to boxing, we'll talk about it here. My name is Eric Lorta, and I'm here with my co-host, Joe Habib. We got a great show for you today, and if you guys want to call and ask questions, you can call in 323-870-3857. And happy Easter to everybody. Happy Easter. And, hey, man, let's get started. ESPN, Shakur Stevenson versus Chichiro Yoshino. 12 rounds. It's a WBC lightweight title eliminator. Stevenson wins by 6-round TKO. This was a complete domination. He knocked Yoshino down in rounds 2 and knocked him down again in round 4. He looked good. He looked quick. I mean, Yoshino was definitely overmatched here, but Stevenson did what he was supposed to do. He looked great. We may be looking at a potential pound-for-pound star right here, man. He looked really good. The one thing I will say about Yoshino is, you know, we can look at Yoshino and he didn't belong in there. It's clear he didn't belong in there with Shakur. But that's not, you know, Shakur can only fight who he can fight. You know what I mean? It's for this WBC title eliminator. Shakur wins. It's, you know, and it was a complete whitewash, but he did exactly what he was supposed to do with a guy of this caliber. And he got him out of there. And that was the big thing. For me, it was the big thing because I thought he needed a good performance here. He couldn't go like a 12-round shutout with this guy. He had to put some damage on him. And sure enough, second round, fourth round, and then they stopped him in the sixth. Who is it? Was it Tim Bradley said it was premature or something like that? Or I don't know. I don't know if he had, but there was the Yigit fight that he said, and we'll get into that.
Yeah, the Yigit
but,
one. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Shakur was dominating this fight. This wasn't even close.
You know what's crazy? When I was watching this fight, I was saying to myself, has Shakur just really developed? Like, has he even hit his full stride yet? Because I know we say this a lot, and it's kind of cliche, but he's showing us something different every fight. Like, in this fight last night, the way he was just going to the body and then just kind of like shooting uppercuts off body shots, he just seems like really more comfortable. And it seems like he likes having these extra rounds. It's like he's finally embracing being a professional fighter, in other words, where he's got the smaller gloves now, he's got more rounds to work with now. So I just think he's really starting to settle into becoming a pro.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say something extremely controversial. And I was listening to Bradley last night, and a lot of times I say to myself, oh, Bradley, stop blowing things out of proportion. Stop being so hyperbolic with your statements. But I was actually agreeing with when he was saying, like, this guy's a phenom. And like I said, I'm going to continue on with this statement. Could he be better when it's all said and done? Will he end up being better than Floyd Mayweather at the end of the day? Is he the next generational talent that we're going to have in boxing? Will he? We hear the next Floyd Mayweather being thrown around a lot, right? But is it applicable this time around in this type situation? Can we make that comparison with this fighter, right? Because if you look at Floyd Mayweather, one thing that hampered him in his career, and it kind of made him have to change his style as he got older, was his hand problem.
Yeah.
And he also had, I think, some shoulder injuries. But because Shakur Stevenson has suffered no damage. And Floyd really hasn't suffered damage either, but his body broke down. So Shakur Stevenson's body holds up. He never has those issues with his hands like Floyd did, or his body never breaks down to the extent and to the degree that Floyd Mayweather did. Because early on in Floyd Mayweather's career, he was a power-punching, aggressive guy.
Yeah, he absolutely was.
Right?
It wasn't until he went to welterweight that he got away from that.
So when you look at guys like Tyson Fury and Shakur Stevenson, who kind of started off their career being more boxer-type fighters and I don't want to say safety first, but a little bit more defensively responsible, and they kind of worked their way into their career. Now we're seeing Shakur becoming more aggressive. Now we're seeing Fury become more aggressive. So a lot of times fighters will start off being aggressive, and because of that, they can probably have some wear and tear or suffer damage, whether it be hands or whatever. But now we're seeing it kind of be the other way, where fighters are kind of easing their way in, and as their career moves on, once they got the miles on, right, they're finishing, the second half stronger. So they're pouring it on the second half, and they were easing into it in the first half. So I think when we were critical of Shakur, how he was a little bit too defensive early on, does that benefit him moving forward? Because now, as he peaks and goes into his prime, he has a lot more miles left on the tank because of what he did early on, not taking those risks and suffering damage. Was that a good strategy? And will we see him moving forward be this knockout guy, be this more dangerous sniper-type guy who places these shots perfectly?
I think it depends. I think it depends. You can't really teach aggression in the sense that, you either got it or you don't. I'm not 100% sure. Like, Floyd had it. There was no question. I mean, when you saw him fight early in his career, he was there to take you out. There was no, he was going right after you. Shakur didn't really start like that. Now he is like that. So, he'll be aggressive with a guy like this. Would he be aggressive with a guy like Haney? I don't know.
Question.
I don't know.
Good question.
That's a fight I really don't want to see because I just don't think it's a fan-friendly fight. I mean,
style-wise,
I don't think it would be that great. I think it would be a very difficult fight to score, and I don't think it's a very entertaining fight. I just don't. I mean, I would watch it. Don't get me wrong. I would, we would watch it. We would enjoy it. But from a fan's, like a casual fan's perspective, that's the worst fight you could possibly make. to me anyway, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
He does impress me, though. He's come a long way. He's doing better. And now that he's, he's a lightweight guy, he could be the best of the lightweights out there. I mean, I was sold on Haney as being the best lightweight, and I still think he is until proven otherwise. But, man, I'll tell you what, it's tough to look at Shakur and say, who beats that guy?
I think I would favor Shakur over Devin right now, but once again, we can't count Devin out. It's still an interesting fight.
Devin is so good. Devin, Haney does remind you of like a welterweight Floyd, where you just can't touch that guy. But Shakur's the same way. You can't touch him either. It's hard. Like, You watch these two, and very rarely do you have two guys like this coming up at the same time, same hair. You know what I mean? It's like, this is,
The interesting thing about Haney, because he gets criticized for being an overly defensive fighter, and gets criticized for being, just being overly concerned about, like, doesn't like to engage, in other words. But I kind of disagree with that, because I think he's a very underrated, physically strong guy. Like, when you get close to him and he grapples and mauls you on the inside. When he was fighting Kambosos and he's grabbing him, he was kind of like tossing him around and throwing him back and pushing him back. And he gives you that bump and he just...
I can't even imagine how strong those guys are.
He's a very gritty guy. I think his grittiness and his physical strength, the way he can kind of position guys and body them around and move them around and manipulate them where in a way where he can line them up for his shots, I just think that really goes unnoticed. And I'm curious to see when you take Devin Haney, as big as he is, and you put him up against Shakur, if that physical strength could offset some of the craftiness of Shakur Stevenson. That's why the fight's interesting. But I don't know. It could also turn out to be a chess match, like you say, and,
yeah.
and two guys just pecking and prodding at each other and not really taking chances. So who knows how that fight would play out.
Yeah.
But I think Haney will be very physical, in my opinion, against Lomachenko, and he'll kind of bully the smaller man. I see that happening when they fight.
I think just like Teofimo did, where you could see, you're going to see a huge size difference in there. And, yeah, man, I tell you what, I don't see any way Lomachenko gets past Haney. And I think that's a wipeout.
Yeah,
I think that is a wipeout fight.
There are a few people out there that are saying that Lomachenko is being underestimated, but I don't know. He doesn't seem to be 100% with it, in my opinion.
No. No, he's had a long career, just his amateur career alone. I mean, the guy's got to be, one of the best amateurs ever, you know? I mean, so... Bang Mateo, thank you so much. He said, Fandora is done. Jack's the spirit of Mendoza, in my opinion. Or lacks the spirit of Mendoza, in my opinion.
I mean, we could be Monday morning quarterback, and, you know, hindsight is 20/20, but...
I've always said about Fandora, I've never been impressed by that guy. I have never been impressed by that guy.
Yeah, shout out to D-Style, because he was always telling me that... Fandora was a knockout waiting to happen, and like I told you before the show, you know, he also said when, you know, the greatest compliment you can give a fighter after every fight is he's got a great chin. But that's not really a good compliment, you know what I mean?
You know what? And with Fandora, man, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, man. But Fandora shouldn't need a chin. He's got that big long jab. You should be fighting everybody at a distance. Nobody should get close to that guy. Whoever taught that guy how to box and didn't use his size as an advantage, I'm like, why? Can you imagine Manny Stewart with that guy?
Oh, yeah, he'd be screaming at him in the corner.
Unbeatable.
What the fuck you doing? Bring a jab.
I mean, really, he would have been unbeatable, you know, as big as that guy was. And, I mean, with that jab, I mean, Jacob Sims, thank you so much. He said, I think Shakur will start to walk down Devin. If the fight is consistently on the inside, it will be a wash in Shakur's favor.
I
think you hit the nail on the head with that strength factor. With Devin being so strong, that, and I think he's stronger than Shakur, and I don't know that, you know.
We had Kenny Porter on the Boxing Voice way back when, after his son lost to Kell Brook. And he kept complaining about the holding. I was saying, Kenny, with all due respect, I love you, but you have to differentiate the difference between holding and clinching. A guy who's clinching and he's grabbing, and like I've said several times, not the time we're done it, guy that's grabbing you and walking you back, releasing the clinch and punching off the clinch is a different kettle of fish than when you have a guy like Amir Khan who grabs you like this, wide-eyed, and looks over at the referee. Let's break this. That's a different story. Like, when you got a guy, like, walking you back, grabbing you with one arm, twisting you to turning you, then punching you, that's just being physical, in my opinion. And I was trying to tell Kenny that. I was like you gotta be able to deal with the physicality sometimes of the bigger guy who's going to wrestle with you like that. That's part of the game. And I think people really don't look at these little – idiosyncrasies, these little nuances to Devin Haney's game. I encourage everyone to just watch what he's doing in there. There is a method to this guy's magic.
Yeah, there is.
Whether it's aesthetically pleasing to you or not, it's effective.
Look, man, John Ruiz was not aesthetically pleasing, and he was effective. You know, like him or not,
Klitschko,
same way, you know. Nando Yama says that Loma can win. He needs to be active and aggressive. Scrap the downloading BS. I agree. I think that term's way overused anyway. I hate when they do that. They just downloading, you know, like he's like a computer or something like that. Or he's, you know.
Come on, man.
Come on, stop.
No one just sits there and gives away rounds. A lot of times,
right.
If you're downloading information, that means that you haven't figured it out yet. Right. And if you haven't figured it out yet, and rounds are going by while you're trying to figure it out,
you're losing rounds.
You're losing rounds.
Yeah.
It's like if my boss, I go to work tomorrow and I'm given a task. All right, we need this done by the end of the day. Then at the end of the day, the job's not done. And my boss goes, what's going on here? I was just downloading information, man. I'm just downloading information. I'm going to get the task done, but, you know,
yeah.
Just maybe get it done maybe later in the week. Why? Why are you going to get it done later in the week? I need this done now. Well, I mean, I'm just downloading information. Imagine going around in life, right? I'm just downloading information. Sir, why were you speeding today? Did you realize? Well, I was just downloading information while I was going like past.
I was downloading information. I saw the speed limit sign, but then I had to download the information to figure out.
I had to download the actual information of me like reading the sign. I mean, in what world does that even fly?
James Braille says, "I'm convinced Loma exposes Haney. I think it's the other way around. I really do. I think that you're going to see that jab working." I think you're going to see a size difference, what you saw in that Lopez fight, but, you know, the Teofimo fight, but Haney's not going to let up, man. You're not going to see a swing. I mean, it's not going to be close. It's going to be one-sided. Wouldn't 9-3, 10-2, I think it's going to be that kind of fight. I really do. I don't think he's big
surprised.
Enough. He's not big enough, man.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's this 9-3, 8-4 type of fight.
Yeah, I think 8-4 would be very generous.
Yeah.
But again, man, that's why they fight. But, you know, again, man, he's a big guy. He's just a big guy compared to Loma. Loma's way over his head right now. All right, let's talk about the undercard. Jared, Big Baby Anderson. Hey, Beeb, I don't know if I told you or not. Did you know that Jared Anderson, did you know he's from Titletown?
I absolutely did.
Did you know he's from Ohio, an Ohio native? No idea. How about that? That's crazy. It's crazy what we learn when we tune in here. Big Baby wins via third round TKO. Arias's corner stopped the fight. It was a good stoppage, man. Anderson looked good. Here's my issue with Anderson, and I don't know if it's he just gets lackadaisical in fights, like you have to wake him up or what. But he got caught with some big shots here. Like some, you know, if like another heavyweight was throwing him, you'd probably be concerned. Arias didn't have any real problem, real power to challenge Anderson. That being said, he got hit a couple of times in there that I'm like, wow, he shouldn't have got hit with that shot. But I don't think he thought there was any real competition there. There was no real danger there for him. Jared Anderson is the best heavyweight on the planet right now. He's better than Tyson Fury. He's better than Alexander Usyk. He could beat Anthony Joshua right now. He could beat Usyk right now, and he's already knocked out Tyson Fury cold in sparring. That's the rumor. That's the rumor that I heard. That's the rumor.
True. I saw that video upload of that video game that was being played by those two guys. That did happen with the video game. I did see that.
With the video game. That's what I heard. The people in the know, the people around the campfire said that the reason that Deontay Wilder fight was postponed is he got knocked out in training by my boy, Jared Big Baby Anderson. That's what I heard.
Let me ask you this. Do you think Big Baby Anderson's maybe getting a little complacent?
Yes.
Maybe he's getting bored in there with this level of opposition,
yes.
And maybe he's getting frustrated that he hasn't had like a better fight. You think he
yes.
needs? They gotta. You know what I would say? I would like this. Like he should be in there with a guy like Dillian White right now. Who else would be a good guy for him? Maybe a Tony Yoka.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of these up and coming guys. Like
yeah.
maybe Azealia Zhang for him. Like Azealia Zhang would be a good fight for him. You know, they got to stop putting him in there with like guys in the maybe bottom 15, 12, like top
yeah.
12, 15.
Yeah.
You know, they're putting him in there with like top 30 guys. Maybe put him in there with a Jermaine Franklin next, you know?
Yeah.
These are the fights that maybe he should be in there with. He should be in there with these guys. And, you know, if you give him about maybe two or three more years, you may be looking at the best heavyweight in the world in two or three years. It could quite possibly, you know, come to fruition, you know, that he'll be the best. I don't disagree with that. He's got a lot of potential. But what I'm seeing right now is I'm seeing a little bit of complacency during the fights. Maybe he's getting bored. Maybe
that's the thing is during the fights.
Yeah, these guys just aren't challenging him.
Yeah. Nando Llamas, thank you so much, man. We appreciate it, brother. Thank you for the support. Let's see, where was it at? Elunico Cucho. Frank Sanchez beats Anderson. I got to be honest.
Another good fight.
I can't say that I disagree with him. Frank Sanchez is one of those fighters that nobody wants to fight because his style is terrible. He makes everybody – he's one of those fighters that's going to make you look bad. He just is. He's got that Cuban style. He doesn't want to get hit, doesn't take too many chances. He's a nightmare guy to fight. He is a
The way Frank Sanchez boxed circles around Efe Ajagba,
yeah,
was shocking to me. I thought that would be a good fight. Try to remember if I even picked Ajagba in that fight, because I've never been high on Frank Sanchez. But now I'm starting to have to wake up to the fact that this guy can fight. You know?
Yeah, Jermaine Franklin, I think, would be a really good fight for him because he's a good gatekeeper guy. I mean, he lost Anthony Joshua. I think, and Tim Bradley brought up the point that he could beat Anthony Joshua right now, and I completely believe that. I think Anthony Joshua is done. I really do. And you can say, okay, well, he won the Franklin fight, blah, blah, blah. He's done, son. You can see it in the Franklin fight. He should have smashed Franklin. No,
I'm going to be honest with you, because I've been hearing all this ridiculousness. Oh, he showed improvement against Franklin. He looked better against. I went back and watched the Usyk 2 fight between Joshua and Usyk, and he looked light years better in that fight than he did against Franklin. Like he
was
actually
shocked that he switched trainers. Shocked.
He was actually throwing the right hand. Like, he had some good moments in that fight, but it's weird because right around the eighth round, I think it was the ninth round, where Usyk had that big round and he hurt Joshua. When he hurt Joshua, that's when Joshua became tentative and started parring the jab again. I think Joshua came to a realization in that fight that I'm hitting this guy with everything but the kitchen sink and I can't stop him. And I think it really defeated him mentally in that fight. That's where he started to break down. It's like, if I can't hurt guys like this, with all due respect to Usyk, he's a lot smaller than me, and I'm hitting him with my Sunday punch, and I'm not putting a dent in him. He keeps coming at me, and he's actually hitting me, and I'm getting hurt. Right then and there, that was the turning point, in my opinion, where he's like, and then after that fight, when Lomachenko said to him, oh, you're strong. And I guess he took offense to that because I guess in the UK there's this controversy with black soccer players by calling them strong. It means you're just assuming that they have no skill and they're just getting by with their strength or whatever. And he took offense to that. He said, what do you mean? I don't have skill. And right then and there, it's almost like he was saying to himself, what am I, just a big guy with power and I don't have the skills to compete anymore? He was kind of like asking himself that question because he replied to Lomachenko, oh, what do you mean? I don't have skill. So even this guy is second guessing himself. And then when that goofball, Gareth Davis, after the fight, when he walks up to him and says, AJ, this was a fascinating 12 rounds. And he goes, was it? Like we're not getting on AJ. AJ is revealing to us what's going on right now. He doesn't have confidence in himself. He is the one who's questioning his ability at this point. And if you really believe that he was improving, then why not throw him in there with Tyson Fury? If he improved from the Usyk fight to this Franklin fight, then he should be ready for Tyson Fury, if that's accurate. You wouldn't be saying he needed more fights.
You got to
so
put him in there.
This division is wide open.
Yeah, you got to put him in there with Fury right now. If I'm Eddie, you have to. Because they talked about putting him in there with Dillian. Shut up. Put him in there with Tyson Fury right now. Because he doesn't have a lot left. While he's still a marquee name, if I'm the manager, he's still a marquee name, you got to put him in here now. Because if everybody saw Everybody saw what we all saw. It was confusion. It was a guy who's not there anymore. He still has his reflexes. He still, if you want to walk away now, walk away. But if he wants to make some money, put him in there with Tyson Fury now and cash him out, because that's it.
Will this be an incomplete resume?
No.
Everyone wants to talk about the Joseph Parkers and this and that. Will this be an incomplete resume if he finishes career without fighting Wilder or Fury?
No. He's still got the best career. He's still got the best resume in the heavyweight division. By far. And you could say Tyson Fury, the fights with Wilder equals whatever. Listen, he has fought more top heavyweights than anybody in the division, period.
Shout out to Ring IQ. Ring IQ made a point because the Ring magazine had Wilder over Fury. No, excuse me, Wilder over Joshua in their rankings. And Ring IQ said he looked at the top 10 that Ring had, and he goes, how could Joshua be behind Wilder if Joshua beat three of those guys in the top 10 that Ring had? He said he beat Parker, he beat White, and who else did he beat? He beat Ruiz. So he's got three wins over people in that three wins over people in that top 10. Well, Wilder doesn't have
guys.
Wilder didn't have a. I think Wilder had one. I think Luis Ortiz was at the bottom of that list. So you put Joshua behind Wilder, right? And you know he beat three guys on that list while Wilder did not. But then the rebuttal to that was there was a good discussion on Twitter about this. Well, you have to look at the guy's last five fights. You know, and look at Wilder's last five fights and look at Joshua's last five fights. You know, there's so many ways you could look at it, but, you know.
I don't know.
I guess
Wilder hadn't fought. What has he fought, like, once a year for the past 4 years?
Yeah. Joshua's been more.
I mean, really? He beat Ergovic last time. Wasn't there? Who did he beat last time? Was it Ergovic that he beat last time? Wilder? I'm trying to think of who it was. I don't think it was Ergovic. It was
Hellenius.
That was the guy. Hellenius. You know, who's waiting to get knocked out. You know,
yeah.
And it's like, no. I mean, AJ still has the best way. He's still marketable. That's what I'm saying. He's still marketable. I could still sell a fight with this guy. This guy goes in and fights Dillian White and looks anything like what he did. He may win the fight, but he doesn't gain anything. He doesn't gain any traction from it. In fact, he lost traction with this fight. He fights Dillon the same way he's going to lose traction again because Dillon's washed. You know? He's a washed fighter.
Yeah, if that becomes another uneventful performance, I don't know. Like I said last week, take the Fury fight and then take the White and Wilder fights after the Fury fight. Like, get that penny because you're never – if you don't fight Fury now, you're never going to fight him.
No.
Doesn't make sense to not fight him now.
No.
Fight Fury, you lose, and then you fight White, and have Wilder be the swan song, and then just call it a day.
Yeah.
As long as Usyk and Fury are heavyweight champion of the world, right? Like, what's Eddie Hearn's plan? Is he waiting for one of these guys to retire, and then he's going to have Joshua swoop in and pick up a vacant belt?
Right. You know,
because here's the thing, you fight Wilder for a vacant WBC title. That's not a gimme.
They made a huge mistake when he won the belt so young, and I get it. Charles Martin had the belt. They went and took it from him. I think you have to at that point. I think you have to pay for it. I think you do. But they never really got his skills up to par. You know what I mean? They never really got him to where he needed to be, and I think they did him an injustice. And through all that, he's still a good fighter. He's still great, man. He can't argue with it. Again, the best resume in the heavyweight division right now, still.
I said this on Thursday because people want to talk about the new Joshua, the old Joshua.
Right.
Can he rebuild himself? And my answer to that question was, this was who Joshua always was. This is the Joshua who always was. They needed to be certain fighters that were going to reveal this to us. Like, this was always going to happen at some point. This wasn't you just wake up one day and this happens to you. I went back and watched that Wilder Fury 3 fight. And these guys were beating each other from pillar to post.
That's got to take years off you, man.
But when you looked at each other's, the look in each other man's eyes and what they would do, like these guys were in there still fighting to the very end. Like Wilder was still trying to win that fight later in the fight, as tired and as beat up as he was. He was still landing a good shot every now and then. Like, he did not shut down mentally. Like, his killer instinct is just embedded in his soul, right? That's something that you're just born with. Fury has it. Wilder has it. Usyk has it, right? And again, this is no disrespect to Joshua. He just doesn't have that. Doesn't have that intangible like these other guys have. But that doesn't mean he's not a great fighter. Even without that, he still is a great fighter, but when you match him up with those guys and that is missing, that could be the determining factor in not getting him over the line against those guys.
All right. MEZ Box says, how did they do him an injustice? What are you talking about? They did him an injustice. His handlers did him an injustice because he wasn't ready to be the heavyweight champion of the world. His skill set was not of a heavyweight champion. If you started looking at like Klitschko and everything like that, to me, he got it early. And when you get it early, now you have to fight guys. Now you have to fight top guys. Because
like
now you're the top guy. You know what
Tyson
I mean?
Say when he became the youngest heavyweight champion in the world? He wasn't ready for it.
Right.
It's too much.
It's a lot. It's too a lot
much.
To take on, man. It's a lot to take on. And not to mention going in front of, you know, England, sold out stadiums in England at that young age. And, you know, not necessarily young age, but just young in your career. He was young to be the champ. To me, you know, and maybe I'm wrong. What do I know? But look where he is now. Just saying, you know, you could see his, you know, again.
This was always going to happen.
This was going to happen, right?
If you put the right guys in front of him, they were going to reveal this to us.
Yeah, agree. You know, and I don't know that Anthony Joshua wasn't a product of good matchmaking. He was, but he wasn't. I mean, he's a good fighter. I mean, he is a good fighter, but he's just not there anymore. You know,
remember
I guess
when Mickey,
my point.
You remember when Mickey said to Rocky before he was going to fight Glover Lang?
Yeah.
He goes, they was handpicked. And he goes, what do you mean? They weren't good fighters? Nah, they was good fighters. But this kid will knock you tomorrow, Rock. So, I mean, you have to ask yourself, like, Charles Martin, right?
Yeah.
Everything was just... Everything
who won the title on an injury, by the way.
Yeah, everything, again, this sounds like people are going to hate the haters, but everything was like right place at the right time.
Yeah.
Right? Fight Klitschko, coming off of a two-year layoff, you know, coming off a loss, and then one, and then you're defending your IBF title, and then they throw the WBA vacant title in there. Mm. Right? So it's like,
yeah.
You get a vacant WBA title. You get that IBF title over with Charles Martin. And then Joseph Parker. That win's not really aging well, right? Look at Joseph Parker moving on from that. And even that wasn't a great performance either.
Because
AJ
goes to the Hall of Fame, in my opinion, no questions asked. If he retires,
I vote him in based off of the era. I mean, he, like I said, he did beat a lot of solid guys.
Yeah. Okay.
But he just... I don't know. A lot of it to me was just kind of right place, right time type thing. And that's not to say he's not good, but he's just, I don't know. He's just never, he's never like entered that iconic level. Like Fury, this guy's, you know, he's like the best. And it's going to be hard to knock him off that perch.
Yeah. Somebody said that Joe Joyce beats Wilder and AJ. I 100% agree with that. 100%.
Good.
Let's talk about Keyshawn Davis, Olympian man, versus Anthony Yigit, 10 rounds, lightweights. Davis stops Yigit in round 9. Let me tell you what, a lot of people saying Tim Bradley, I think, said the fight should have been, prematurely stopped. Anybody saying this fight was prematurely stopped is crazy. This fight should have been stopped sooner. I mean, this was a one-sided beating. I mean, this
Can
was one-sided.
Can I ask you a question? Like, what is it nowadays with these, like, Do people want to see these guys carried out on stretchers now? Like, do they not understand? Have they not looked at the history of this sport? Have we not learned anything from letting fights go on and seeing like how the effect of a prolonged beating has on a fighter? Again, like, what is the sense of going out, like, having this moral victory of getting beat up for 12 rounds when there's no chance of you winning? Zero chance.
That guy did not win 1 second of any round, 1 minute of any round. Did not win. Was getting smashed. Hard shots.
I get it. As a fighter, you want to be able to say you went the distance. Losing by decision looks a lot better on your record than knockout.
Yeah.
But ask yourself that question 5 years after you retire or 3 years after you retired, if it was worth it. You know what I'm saying? What do these people want? Is this like the movie Gladiator where people have to like, I mean.
And Yigit's a good fighter. I mean, Yigit's a good fighter, you know. It's not like he's some schlep out there, you know, and he was just outclassed. And I get he's got that, you know, I want to finish the fight. I get that. No question. I get that. But your corner, again, and that ref, I don't know what that buffoon was doing, man. I really don't.
Yeah.
Like, what on earth, man? Like, give me a break.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about this. The zone card, Jesse Bam Rodriguez versus Christian Gonzalez. Bam wins a unanimous decision, 118 to 110, 117, 111, and 116, 112. Just complete one-side domination, man. That was it.
Yeah.
Bam Rodriguez is the truth.
Yeah, Ben is just cruising at this point right now, and Eddie made a very interesting statement at the end of the fight. He's like, "Well, yeah, you know, he's kind of cruising to these victories, but is this going to be enough for people to want to, you know, come see him? Is this going to enhance his profile?" You know, so I like Ben. Don't get me wrong, but
I do too.
But I don't know. Is this the type of performance, and is this the type of fighter, as good as he is? Is this the type of performance that's going to say, yeah, man, I want to start watching flyweight boxing again? Like when Michael Carbajal and Chiquita Gonzalez, when they were fighting, you know, Johnny Tapia, they had to go above and beyond to look good. And again, I'm not saying you got to go out there and give us a gaudy ward every time out, but at what point do you say to yourself, I got to look impressive here? Or, you know, I know the win is first and foremost, but can Bam be that guy like Michael Carbajal and Chiquita Gonzalez was back in 96 getting million-dollar paydays back then? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Can he be that Johnny Tapia? I don't know.
Boxing Vitals. Boxing Vitals says, and I confirmed this, I don't know. Bam suffered a fractured jaw, and that came from Bam himself. All right. I didn't hear it, but hey, I trust you. No reason to think it's not true. Where was the other one at? Nando Yama says, I saw Bam live in Fresno. He's so tiny in real life. How much does he weigh? It's a flyweight. Like, what I mean? He's like a donkey, you know?
112 pounds. Like, were you expecting him to be big? I mean,
you know what? You know why? Because you see these dudes on TV. You see these dudes on TV, and no matter what weight they're in, they always look big because they're on TV, you know, and they look the same size. So you figure they're average-looking person. And when you see these guys in real life that are like 112, it's like a jockey. Like, what do you expect? He's a jockey, you know?
I saw Bam in real life. He's really tiny. No shit, he's 112 pounds.
I remember the first time I saw Rashee Warren and Gary Russell, and I was at the trials. And I saw these guys and, like, these two murderers in there. They looked like kids. I mean, and they were kids at the time, but, I mean, they looked like grade school kids if you looked at them, you know? It was insane. But either one of these guys could just take you apart in a moment's notice, you know?
You know what's funny, too? I saw way back when Bernard Hopkins was fighting at middleweight, I saw him, like, in 98 at a local show at the Roxy. He was there to watch one of his friends. And I was standing next to this guy, and this guy had a waist. It looked like I could grab him with one hand, like his waist. He was so friggin' thin, but he was wiry.
Yeah.
All veins popping out and shit. But this guy was really thin. You know what I mean? He's a really thin guy.
You know, and he was just walking around. He walks around at, what, 170 maybe?
At that time, 170, probably,
175 top.
This guy's just not – he's not a big framed guy.
Always stayed
in
shape. But he always stayed in shape. You know,
a lot of these guys, like, they're just not really big guys. you know.
What they say, like Hopkins, he was so disciplined that like he wouldn't eat a dessert or anything like that for like 4 years or something. I mean, there's like legendary stories of him being like the discipline that that guy had.
Wouldn't even eat a piece of cake on his birthday. Like, come on, bro.
Guy's hardcore, man.
I can't knock it. He's in the Hall of Fame. So.
Hey, it works for him, man. Good for him.
What are you going to do?
And I'll tell you what, he's still in good shape. You know, you look at him, how old is he now?
Yeah, he looks great, man.
How old is he now?
I think he's 4 years older. He's like 57 now, I think.
57. God. And he's in great shape, man. He looks like he can go a couple rounds. He looks like he can get right back in there today, you know?
Yeah.
Mirzhan Akhmadiliyev versus Marlon Topalez. Big upset here. Topalez pulls off the upset via split decision. 115-113 twice. And the third judge had it 118-110 for Akhmadiliyev. Beeb, pretty big upset. How did you have it?
115 and 113 for Akhmadiliyev. And just like in that Caleb Plant, David Benavidez fight, this was a tale of two fights.
Yeah.
First 5 or 6 rounds, I thought that Topalez, once again, he was winning rounds by just being pesky. And he was confusing, frustrating Akhmadiliyev a little bit. You know, he had some awkward movement. He had like a little peppery type jab in his face. But as the round wore on, I thought Akhmadiliyev started having success with his jab. He was throwing a harder jab. He was being more committal with his jab. Whereas before he was trying too hard to land it perfectly, in other words, so he could track him down. At this point, he was just throwing it hard, whether he hit him on the shoulder or the chest, whatever. And he was starting to knock Topalez off balance. And when he was knocking him off balance, he was stepping in, and then he was starting to land the left hand, going to the body a little bit, throwing the uppercut. And I thought he started pushing him back, tracking him down, and walking him back to the ropes on a couple of occasions. And I thought his aggression was starting to take its toll on Topalez, and he was slowing him down. I thought he had a really strong second half of the fight. I gave him the last 7 rounds of the fight. So did Chris Mannix. So did a lot of people. So, I don't know. I thought this – I'm not going to say this was a bad decision, but most people had Akhmadiliyev edging it out, you know? So
yeah.
And we talked about this. When you have a big underdog like that, when he's doing more than what's expected, does he get extra credit for that? If this was just two guys who were on even – we're on even expectations, right? You didn't have the Akhmadiliyev, who was like a 5-1 favorite, a 5-1 favorite going into this fight. You didn't have that, right? Would some of these rounds have been given to Topalez because he was doing more than what you expected? I think subconsciously that happens in a lot of fights, right? So maybe it could have happened here. Who knows? Just my opinion.
There you go. Let's see here. Let's go to Showtime. Sebastian Fundora. This is a big upset versus Brian Mendoza for Fundora's WBC interim junior middleweight title, whatever that means. Mendoza knocks out Sebastian Fundora in the 7th, and it was a vicious knockout. And he wasn't winning a round. I mean, Fundora was completely dominating here that fight up until that point in time, and he was flattened. And I'll be honest, man, I've never cared for Fundora. I've always thought he fought all wrong for his size. I don't think he ever used his size to his advantage. You know, you think that, you know, he shouldn't be getting in firefights or anything like that. That jab, it should be a jab, and that's it. And that could win him the fight, as big as he was. But for whatever reason, he fights on the inside, got clipped. Steve, what were your thoughts?
We always talk about him using his size, and for the first 6 rounds, he was, you know, measuring his distance pretty well. He was using his jab, and he was fighting pretty well from the outside. And he was, you know, a lot of occasions Mendoza was trying to land the shots on him, and land a left hand on him, and he was kind of turning his shoulder and blocking it with his shoulder. He's like twisting himself. But the one time, you know, that punch is thrown, he has a tendency sometimes to, like, when he twists, every now and then when he'll twist away from a shot to try to, like, block it with his shoulder, a lot of times he'll lean forward. And that one time he dipped a little bit. He dipped right. You watch the shot. He dips into it, right?
Zig when he should have zagged.
Yeah. So a lot of times he'll sit there and try to catch these shots on his shoulder. But when he does it, he kind of dips down into the shot. Just turn your body. But he goes like this. Instead of just turning like this to block a shot, he'll dip his body in, you know. And I don't know, just a bad habit he has. Every now and then he'll dip into shots when he doesn't really have to. So,
you know, I don't know.
If you're going to fight on the inside and you're tall, you got to bend your knees and squat. You don't like do what Paul Williams likes to do, and you don't lean forward to try to get low enough to throw your shots. You got to dip, sit down. You don't lean in to throw a shot on the inside.
Yeah.
You
got
to sit down. And I guess when you're 6'5", when you sit down, you're still not low enough. So then you got to kind of lean in to throw the inside shots to your opponent's body. So he's so tall that when he sits down, he can't throw the body shots the way he wants to. So I guess to some degree he may have to lean in a little bit, but I don't know. You got to figure that out a little bit, because while you're dipping, the other guy is timing that dip.
Yep.
And he dipped and leaned right into that shot. If you go back and watch that.
There it is, man. There it is. So Fundora out. So there you go. Like I said, man, I've never been too impressed. I mean, I was always intrigued by Fundora because of the size, but he just, like I said, I mean, you look at his size and you watch the way he fights and it's like, you know.
It's exciting, but
yeah.
Usually when guys fight exciting,
yeah,
there's always that risk of the excitement can be flipped not in their favor sometimes. And this is one time where the excitement kind of worked against them, I guess.
I do. Yeah, that's right. On that undercard, Brandon Lee versus Pedro Campa. Lee wins a unanimous decision, 99-91, 97-93, 98-92. Now, Beeb, I didn't see this fight. You said there's like some discrepancy with the scorecard, like it was a bad.
I guess there's, again, I don't want to accuse people of anything, but a lot of people going into this fight, they thought that, you know, Brandon Lee could get upset here, right?
Yeah.
You know, they thought Campa was live. And once again, I'm not saying Campa didn't do good. This was kind of like a little bit of a firefight on occasion. This was a kind of an aggressive fight, right? But Brandon Lee fights that way. Like, Brandon Lee is never going to be, you know, confused with Pernell Whitaker or Sugar Ray Leonard. Like
right.
He's going to get in exchanges. And more often than not, he gets the better of the exchanges, right? So once again, because a guy is such an underdog, does a little bit better than expected, I think there's that tendency to want to give that guy extra credit. And I thought Campa lost the fight. I thought Brandon Lee did enough to win. But that's not to say that it wasn't an entertaining fight, and that's not to say that Campa didn't have his moments. Question is, were those moments enough? I'm going to say no. I just think Brandon Lee was getting the better of the exchanges. You know, he was both guys are being aggressive, but I would argue that Brandon Lee's aggression was more effective, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But like I said, there were some guys out there that said that Campa was live, and when a guy, like I said, does better than you expect, you try to convince yourself that he's doing more than what he really is. And again, it's all opinion based.
Yeah, for sure.
It's just my opinion. I think he did well, probably better than expected, but that still doesn't get you the fight, in my opinion.
I agree. All right, let's go to the phones. 530-530. You're live.
Hello, guys. How are you? Happy Easter to both.
Happy Easter, Robert.
Happy Easter. Robbie, I had a quick question for you before we get started. No, this is a legitimate question.
What's the matter with you?
Are you and Mrs. Herrick going to do a little bit of Easter egg hunting today for Easter?
That's not a question.
No. Nope.
What's the Easter holiday going to be like in the Herrick household? We having a lamb leg? Are we having a ham? What's the menu today?
Mom is cooking a turkey, and we're going to have turkey, and Mashed potatoes and gravy.
Who eats a turkey on Easter?
Yeah. Turkey,
what
baby?
About a ham? What about a ham or a lamb? What's going on over there?
Hey, mom found a turkey on sale, so that's what she chose to get. So that's what we're doing.
There you go. Hey, you can't complain. When Mrs. Harris doing the cooking, you can't complain. You just
that's
one
right.
day
funny,
you can't
baby.
Splurge and get a ham. One day you can't splurge and get a ham. Jesus
Joe, do you want to live on California prices of stuff? We do what we can around here. I don't know how things are in Massachusetts, but things in California are expensive, so we do what we can around here. Anyway, let's get to boxing. I was really impressed with Shakur Stevenson last night, man. I think 135 is going to be his one of his better divisions. But the only problem I see with that is you have a guy that's 5'10" who says he's not moving out of the division, and I think that's going to be a major impediment to Shakur Stevenson. I don't know how he deals with Devin Haney and his size. I really don't. I thought Devin would beat Lomachenko and then move out of the division and go to 140, and this would open the door for Stevenson. But according to what they said on ESPN last night, Devin Haney's not going anywhere, and I don't know if Stevenson's ever going to get the credit that he's going to deserve, because the way he looked last night, 135 should be his division, but I don't know how he deals with that size difference. And trust me, there's going to be a major size difference when those two fight. And I don't know how Stevenson deals with that.
Haney's moving up. Haney's not going to be at this weight for very long.
I think the big problem, though, Eric, is because I think there's still a lot of money to be made at 135, and I don't think there's enough money to be made at 140. Because, I mean, I don't know, the Josh Taylor fight, it's okay. It's a great fight.
Yeah.
Teofimo Lopez, great fight. But will that bring you as much money as some of these other fights down here? Like you got Ryan, like Ryan Garcia said, he said he would fight Haney. He wants to fight Haney next if he was to win, right? Could Haney get the winner of that fight? That's a big question mark. But maybe, you know, if Tank has to go on the shelf for a while because of his legal problems, maybe you can make that fight with Ryan, right? You know,
well,
so
you can make
that fight with Shakur too, right? That's a great fight.
And so, also remember, guys, after Haney fights Lomachenko, his top rank contract is done. So he can either go over to DAZN and sign with Eddie and fight Ryan if Ryan beats Tank, or he can renew his contract with Top Rank and get the Stevenson fight. So Devin Haney definitely has options.
The Tank fight's a much bigger fight. If Tank wins that fight, that's a much bigger fight. Shakur Stevenson, there's no money in him right now. None. He's not a draw. He's just
Eric,
not. And I
Eric,
like him.
Eric, I know you think Tank is going to whitewash Garcia, but that's not happening. Ryan is going to beat Tank, so Tank's not going to. Tank is not even going to be in this discussion.
Either way, Robbie, Tank or Ryan is a huge fight for Dev.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So you know,
yeah.
That's what I'm saying. That's why he really wants to stay down.
Either one is a big one, man.
And David,
finally,
is
one forever. Thank you so much,
anyway.
Brother.
What was that?
Is there? Look. Well, what is that? Because he is definitely going to jail, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's racked up guilty on all those counts. You know, I gotta think he's going to jail.
He gets
a hard time seeing this guy not do a
6 months.
I think at the very least he's doing 6 months.
I think so too.
Maybe he gets out in 3. So even with that being said, 3 months. I mean, he could still fight. Possibly at the end of the year. I don't know. Probably not.
You're not in fighting shape in jail.
Yeah.
No.
You can be
right.
In shape,
but not in
fighting shape. Big difference.
So he may be done. He may be done for the rest of the year. Yeah. But at the end of the day, he'll get a big fight next year, without question.
And hopefully, hopefully, he can finally learn to stay out of trouble. I mean, he's a good fighter, but every time you turn around, the guy's in trouble. So,
for the record, I'm picking Ryan Garcia as well. I think he's going to get a 12-round unanimous decision. And I have to say, historically, when Robbie and I pick the same guys, we do pretty well together, man.
You think Ryan Garcia is going to win?
I think he's going to win by 12-round decision, yeah.
I tell you what. I think Tank's going to win that fight as of right now. Again, there's a lot of, you know, you got to look at the weigh-ins and everything like that. But again, this is a pick 'em fight. This isn't, you know, I could see this fight going either way.
Good fight.
I really could, you know.
It's a good fight.
There you go.
I'm just a little bit concerned about Tank's worry about Ryan's size right now.
He is. He does seem to be worried about that, doesn't he?
Worried about that size too much.
Yeah, like, what are you worried about, dude?
I don't understand that.
Yeah. Almost like it's in his head. Yeah.
I'll be honest. I think Ryan's in his head right now, man.
I think he is, too. That could be trouble for Tank, too.
Ryan's fast.
He's,
I think you could, give the edge and power to Tank, but it's close. I think Ryan may be a little quicker with his hands. He's bigger. I think Tank's probably got the all-around. He's more versatile as a fighter. But I think Ryan's size, speed, power, and athleticism, and he's not a bad fighter either. He's got a great jab himself. It's a great fight.
I tell you what, Joe, with Ryan's size and speed and with the way Devin Haney fights, that's the attractive fight at 135 right now. That really is.
You like that fight too, huh, Robbie?
Yeah.
And I tell you what, I think that Garcia may be faster than Haney. I think he is, man. Garcia is fast.
Ryan has a style where you're gonna have to fight him. You know what I mean? Like he Luke Campbell tried to fight a chess match against Ryan and he couldn't do it. Like Ryan wouldn't let him. He just jumped on him, right? Ryan's a good fighter, man.
He is. He really
is. You know, look at it this way, guys. It's almost too bad that you don't have Ryan fighting Haney and Stevenson fighting Lomachenko, and then the two winners square off. And instead, you've got it set up the way that it currently is. I mean, could you imagine Stevenson and Lomachenko? That would be a much better matchup than what the Haney-Lomachenko is going to be. And then Ryan fighting Haney, that would be one hell of a matchup. The chess pieces currently are set up in the wrong positions.
Pipe dreams, Robert. Pipe dreams.
Robert and Eric, let me ask you both this question because I'm hearing a lot of this being thrown out there. And I know people don't always like to talk about the business of boxing, but I like talking about it. I find it interesting. A lot of people are saying, because Ryan and Tank don't have a proven pay-per-view track record, why is this fight on pay-per-view? Why are they charging so much for this fight? Blah, 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 blah. And my argument is always this. You can't, I'm not saying you can't, but sometimes you don't always look at what two guys have done in the past, because when you put two guys together, synergistically, it just works. And in my opinion, you could say what you want about, Tank only did this, Ryan's never done that, blah, 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 blah. But there's a lot of people talking about this fight right now. There's casuals talking about this fight. I have people saying,
fight.
Did you see? Did you? So sometimes, and I think more often than not, you can't always look at what has this guy done? What has that guy done? You put two guys, the right two guys together at the right time, and it just works. And in my opinion, this is just one of those times where you're putting these two guys together. I think this could do at least 500,000 pay-per-view buys, maybe more.
Yeah, maybe more.
Two networks involved too, guys. You've got because both networks are advertising that this fight's going to be on pay-per-view on both services. So you've got that in play also. So you might actually get even more pay-per-view buys depending on how people decide to buy the fight, whether they buy it through DAZN or Showtime.
There you go.
And they're actually doing a really good job promoting this fight.
They are. They really
are. Yeah, doing a great job promoting this fight. Shout out to everybody
and
involved.
And another thing to point out for people on the East Coast, it's going to start an hour earlier than normal pay-per-views. Normally, pay-per-views start at 9. They're going to start this one at 8.
Good.
Yeah.
So
there you go.
They're doing everything the right way to make sure that as many people want to see this fight actually can't, which is a good thing. You know, and I like the idea of having earlier pay-per-views. You know, they don't need to last until 12 or 1 o'clock in the morning. You know, make them earlier as possible, because the earlier you make them, the more people might actually put eyeballs on the fight. So, good job.
There you go. All right, Robert, we're going to get running, man. Happy Easter, and take them on. Happy Easter, too.
All right.
Give me a turkey leg, Robbie.
All right, we're going to stay in California here. 650-650, you're live.
Hey, what's up, Beeb? My name is Victor. I remember your days with at Boxing Voice. You remember those days? Beeb.
Absolutely.
Oh, man.
Yes.
So what's up with Ness, man? You guys still mingling, or?
Yeah, Ness and I are cool, but you want to talk about something else?
Yeah, what are you talking about? Yeah.
Well,
we're not doing a reunion here.
No. I'm just saying because, you know, Ness is, you know, he's a little funny like that, man. You know, I mean, we've been going back and forth, and he gets all in the hissy fit.
All right, I gotta go. Let's see here. 716 Buffalo. 716, you're live. Maybe not. All right. Just listening. And let's go to 480. 480, you're live.
Yo, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello? All right. What's going on? It's Checkmate.
Checkmate.
What's going on, Checkmate? How you doing, brother?
Being in the chat.
Yes, I can't believe. I mean, you're going for Ryan. You're going for Ryan. Listen, I might have to take your money. If you're going to be crazy enough to bet that Ryan's going to beat Tank, I got to take your money, brother. See, this is the thing. Ryan has potential, right? No one says he doesn't have potential. But Ryan is not really athletic. Ryan does not have the footwork. Ryan does not have the ring IQ. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of things that Ryan needs to work on. Yay, I'm glad he has fans. But he's never been in there with anyone to really test him based on, you know, the quality of opponent. Now, listen to my show the other day when you guys were saying that Luke Campbell was the best. I laughed so hard with you. You guys said Luke Campbell was the best opponent out of anybody Tank has fought. Like, where did this come from? I like to know where did you guys pull that out of a rabbit's hat? So either way, I got Tank knocking out Ryan somewhere between the first and fifth round. I'm going to be betting heavy on that, to be going in the first and fifth round, because I'm going to win thousands of dollars by doing so. And, that's it. So,
did you hear what Tank said, though? Tank said he's gonna start slow. Tank said he's going to start slow. He's going to take his time in this fight.
Yeah, but he's not going to reveal. I mean, you can't really trust that. You know, like, he's going to give you the game plan. You know what I'm saying?
I FaceTimed him the other day, and he was telling me what he was going to do, man. I FaceTimed him.
I think Tank's winning this fight, man. I think Tank's winning this fight.
Everybody thinks this fight's going to end in a knockout. Check this out, Checkmate. Everybody thinks this fight is going to end in a knockout. I'm gonna be making like about probably 12 bets for this fight. I'm gonna take
the
over.
What's up, brother? What's up? You got me. Hit me up in the DM. We got this. But listen, this is the thing. Ryan has never really fought on the back. That fighter, Ryan, never fought anybody. Luke the Fluke. He's never done anything in the pro.
Hey, checkmate, you're cutting out on us.
Nothing.
You're cutting it out.
Oh, I'm sorry. I walked downstairs. Okay, is that better? Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, so
let me tell you something, man.
Never presented it. Yes. Go ahead.
Let me tell you something, man. This whole thing about this guy hasn't fought nobody. I'm gonna reveal a secret to you in boxing. Nobody fights anybody until they fight somebody, and this is that somebody for both guys.
Yeah.
And we're gonna get a lot of questions answered about both guys. Tank Davis has been losing a lot of rounds in these last couple fights. And everybody's saying he's going to get the knockout. There's always that one time when you don't get the knockout. And that most recent time when he didn't get the knockout, he won the fight by inches. Now, I think Ryan Garcia is a better fighter than Esau Cruz. I just do. I think he's more skilled.
I don't.
So if this
not
fight goes
the
distance,
not in
the
league.
If this fight goes, who did Esau Cruz ever beat? So, again, like these are all comparable guys. So what I'm trying to tell you is this. This fight goes the distance. Don't be surprised if Ryan gets a decision. And this fight is in the West Coast. This isn't closer to Ryan's backyard than it is Tank's. And there's going to be a lot of people in the crowd cheering for Ryan. So I'm telling you right now, do not be surprised if Ryan Garcia gets this decision. I think this fight is going the distance.
Okay, well, let me tell you something about, again, a little secret about the Esau Cruz thing. Okay, before this Tank and Esau Cruz fight, I said, this could be Tank's Castaño. This fight could go the distance. And that's what I can send you the tweet. I said that before the fight because I understand styles. He has a little turtle shell style. He's really short combat, but he's strong, right? So, but Tank really put a boxing job on him with one arm. You saying he barely won? No, I gave Cruz, I think, what, four rounds the most? So, no, it's...
I gave Cruz five rounds. I gave Cruz five rounds.
You gave him five. I gave him four. Okay, you gave him five. I gave him four.
Some people had it a draw.
Well, again, some people look what I had it. I
one of the judges
had it
a draw.
I gave him
one of the judges have a draw?
No, of course not. You know, but the thing about
it
is with
is
Ryan, never. When I say the quality opponent, you got to have iron sharp is iron, right? You have to have a quality opponent to bring the best out of you. Ryan has never faced anybody to bring the best out of him. You know what I mean? He was saying, oh, Luke Campbell was tall. Luke Campbell was 5'9". Okay? Now we
Luke
know
Campbell was probably the toughest one.
Tall,
I think,
right?
Luke Campbell is the best one on his resume,
Luke
right?
Campbell is
Luke
not
Campbell.
A tough fighter.
Luke Campbell is 5'9 and a half, almost 5'10". Don't take that half inch away.
Okay. Tank has fought three fighters over 5'9". Okay, but the thing about Luke Campbell, he's a basic Euro fighter. That's it. He brought nothing to the table that I thought was worthy. The only reason why you guys even talk about Luke Campbell is because he fought Loma, and he gave Loma problems. Well, guess what? Several of the last five fighters gave Loma problems. Well, not last five, but you know what I'm saying. Jermaine Ortiz beat Loma. You know what I mean? Nobody's talking about Jermaine Ortiz, but your guys will bring up Luke Campbell. You know, so this is all I'm saying about Ryan. I have no problem with Ryan. I think he's got potential, but that potential has not been realized. And when you see him in the ring, when you see his footwork, when you see his ring IQ, it's all lacking. When he fought Fortuna, The fight was originally scheduled for 135. Okay, Fortuna couldn't make weight, so then they changed the contract, the weight to 140. Okay, just to make sure they can get the fight, didn't have to find another opponent. That's the only reason why I was there, right? So my point is this. When he's getting put in with the best fighter at 135, the hardest puncher at 135, guess what? You're going to see this. That's why I'm betting for between the first and fifth round KO. And then Ryan
can
go on to 140, which he never would. Yeah, he doesn't have the skill. Ryan's a nice guy. He does not have the skill level to compete with Tank. There were two different levels. It's like, you know, college versus junior high. It's just two different levels. And you can, I don't understand. Tell me.
College versus junior high.
That's what I see. Yeah. It's just two different levels. See, you guys always talk about Ryan's hook, Ryan's speed. The only time you guys see is Ryan's speed is when he's in the gym or the garage. Okay? You know, when you see a flash, you know, a hook. Oh, he got him with a hook. His hook is, especially the Luke Campbell hook, it was very awkward. And, you know what I mean? And then Luke went down off a delay. So it wasn't like it was a beautifully planned. It wasn't beautiful. It just looked awkward. You know what I mean? When you talk about Fortuna, you know what I mean? Again, these guys presented Ryan no problem, right? You know, they just – but Tank, Joe, I'm sorry, my brother, be able to remember this conversation.
There you go.
Between one
there
and
you
five.
Go.
KO. All right, fellas.
All right. All right, man. Thank you so much, Checkmate. He's got a lot of good points there. I tell you what, I agree with him with the, you know, like I said, with the Tank win, but KO between one and five. Man, that's quick, man.
Here's the problem with the Tank argument. Tank's got a good resume. He's got a better resume than Ryan. But I'm looking at each other's resume at 135. I'm looking at the last six. Look at the last five or six fights of each guy. Hector Luis Garcia was a 130-pounder moving up to 135.
He walked around at 175.
Rolly Romero is a guy, with all due respect, that no one really thought was extremely the cream of the crop in this division, right? He had a lot of flaws. Isaac Cruz is probably the only legitimate lightweight that he fought. Then he fought Mario Barrios, right, at 140, right? Who was the regular champ. So you look at all these other guys like Yoriorkis Gamboa, Leo Santa Cruz, and you look at Hector Luis Garcia. These are all smaller guys moving up. Like, neither guy, Ryan or Tank, has a stellar resume at 135. My statement is this, and I'll stand by it. I think Luke Campbell is better than anyone Tank Davis has ever fought at lightweight. I think Luke Campbell is better than Isaac Cruz. I think he's better than Romero. I think he's better than Garcia. I'm just being honest.
Yeah,
Barrios is 140-pounder. I'm not even going to put him in there. So if I look at, like, Javier Fortuna, I mean, he's a guy moving up too, right? But when I just think Luke Campbell, I thought he lost a narrow decision to Linares. If that fight was in the UK, he could have easily become champion.
Yeah.
He's an Olympic gold medalist. I think Luke Campbell's a good fighter. I thought he gave Lomachenko a good fight. I had that fight, like, I think, what, maybe eight rounds before? I thought it was a good fight. A lot of people disagree, but I thought he gave Lomachenko a good fight, you know? So, in my opinion, at lightweight, I think Luke Campbell is better than anyone that Tank Davis has ever fought. I think at lightweight, the resumes are very comparable. I'm not, you know, the mistake people make is they want to go 5 years back in the guy's resume and say, oh, he fought this. Look at the last five fights. That's the most relevant.
Yeah.
Look at the last five fights.
You're not the same fighter you were, you know what I mean?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So you got Barrios, Cruz, Romero, and Hector Luis Garcia. So Barrios was 140, right? So let's take that.
Hey, what about Pedraza?
Fight out.
Hey, Sue Sam brought up a good point. What about Pedraza?
That was at 130. And Pedraza's fighting at 140 right now. I think fighting at 140, 147 right now, Pedraza. So let's take the Cruz, let's take the Barrios fight out of there, right? And let's look at all the fights at lightweight. Yoriorkis Gamboa, Leo Santa Cruz. Those aren't real lightweights, really, right? Isaac Cruz, that's a good guy. Romero, Hector Luis Garcia, another guy moving up. So again, like, what has Tank done at 135, right, to tell me that his resume at 135 is leaps and bounds above Ryan Garcia's? I just don't see it.
Yeah, I don't know that his resume is better than Ryan Garcia's at 135. I think, you know, you talk about, like, just a resume overall, maybe. But this is what makes the fight so intriguing, because I think that both fighters are still, like, unproven, per se. You know what I mean?
Both
fighters are really unproven. They both pass that eye test. You both look at them and say, hey, wonder how he would do against this guy. You know, we've seen him fight the Isaac Cruz of the world. We've seen him fight, you know, this guy, that guy, the Luke Campbells. What happens when you step up? And now you're both fighting a step up. This is a big deal. It's a big fight. Let's talk about next week, April 15th in London on ESPN+. 2:00, 2 p.m. on ESPN+, so make sure to tune in. Joe Joyce, your boy, versus Zai Li Zhang, 12 rounds for Joyce's WBO interim heavyweight title. All right. On the undercard there, Michaela Mayo versus Christina Linda, who cares? Then Denzel Bentley versus Kieran Smith, 12 rounds for Bentley's British middleweight title. And that's it next week. That is it.
Yeah.
And then, of course, on April 22nd, we'll preview that Ryan Garcia fight. Sorry about the news here. Let's see what the news and rumors here. Not too much. The Spence Crawford update. Beebe, there's been an update. Anson Wainwright from Ring TV has said that Crawford versus Spence is set for June 17th in Las Vegas. Ring TV said it's a done deal. However, Dan Raphael reported on social media, per Ring report, Spence Crawford set for June 17th. Two sources directly involved told Dan Raphael negotiations continue, no secret, but the deal's not close, and even if made, won't be June 17th. And he said that's the best version of the truth as I know it. So, B, really nothing to report or update. There you go.
Yeah, Steven Espinosa did an interview with Fight Hub TV recently, and he said that all these rumors are false, that they're still just talking and working on it, but there is no date. Nothing has been settled yet.
What are they working on? I mean, why? I don't understand why these two can't come to a decision here. I don't get it. I just don't get it.
I just think what it all boils down to in all of these cases when it comes to these fighters is it all boils down to the money. And if the fighters aren't happy with what they're getting,
you ain't gonna make that.
They're not gonna fight. So this whole thing about this guy's ducking that guy, this guy's afraid of this guy.
Nobody's afraid.
Come on, man.
Yeah, nobody's afraid. They all do this for a living.
These guys want to get paid.
Yeah.
These guys want to get paid.
Amir Khan failed a drug test prior to his fight with Kell Brook. I guess it was, and he's been suspended. He's got a 2-year ban from all sport after a test detected a prohibited substance following his fight against Kell Brook last February, the UK anti-doping agency said. Now, I'm not sure how effective this is since he, you know, essentially retired after the fight. So, you know, what are you going to do? But, you know, what's the point of, you know, getting that now when the fight took place? He had it in the system when the fight took place. I don't know.
Yeah.
Beebe, Andy Ruiz looking for a happy Easter. He was kicked out of his house for cheating. He's been kicked out of his house by his wife. She accused him of cheating and told him to kick rocks. The worst part of this, they have 5 kids together. That's a lot of Easter baskets, my man. That's 5 kids together, man.
You guys should try and work it out, man.
Yeah, try to do something, man. I don't know. That's
go to counseling or something.
And as ESPN reported last night, Josh Taylor versus Teofimo Lopez is now official for June 10th, and it's going to be on ESPN, not a pay-per-view, which is great. It's ESPN, which would be good. That's a good fight, by the way. I think Taylor wins, but, man, it's a good fight.
I like Taylor in that fight too, and the thing about it is the odds are real close there. Like, I think Taylor's like a -150 in that fight. I wouldn't mind putting a little something on.
I think Taylor's gonna win. I haven't seen Teofimo look good since that Kambosos fight. Really haven't.
Yeah.
You know.
Doesn't look good.
There you go. All right, guys, that'll do it for this edition of Ringside Reporter. As always, you can catch Joe Habib on Twitter at jhabib1. Find our YouTube channel at ringsidereporterlive.com. And I'm on Twitter at ringside73. And guys, have a happy Easter, and we will see you next week at normal time, 6 o'clock time. All right, guys.